Welcome to Crash Concepts, where the economy, energy, and the environment are explored. Up next, fresh ideas and insights into the factors that are driving the world and shaping your future. Presenting information you can't afford to live without, here's Chris Martinson.
Hello, this is Chris Martinson of chrismartinson.com with another podcast, and today I'm on the road. I happen to be in Menlo Park, California, and I'm at Mish International Monetary Incorporated, and I'm with Robert Mish today, and this is going to be a really good interview. I was here in Menlo Park, two or three months ago, and we were talking with Robert about the coin market and gold markets, and this is somebody who's on the front lines of this business, selling, dealing, buying rare coins, numismatic coins, precious metals, gold, silver, you name it. And with that frontline view, he has an extraordinary perspective because he gets to see who's coming in, who's buying, who's selling. There's some really interesting stories there. But as well, he's been in business for 49 years. So he was here and has seen a lot and has been paying attention, particularly during the, you know, gold bubble one, as it was back in 1980. Really looking forward to capturing some perspective. So, Robert, it's a real pleasure to have you today.
Thank you for stopping by.
So tell us about your business a little bit. Give people some background on who you are. 49 years in this one spot, doing what you do?
Almost. It actually started out when I was a child. I had a fascination with the subject matters that old coins bring to life, and that's history, geography, economics, art, and culture. And I learned far more about those subject matters from coins than I ever did in the classroom. I was playing with coins after school, and it grew into a business, one that started actually with removing old coins from circulation at a time when we had old coins in circulation because the silver coins are still in circulation. And that was quite a windfall for a 14, 15-year-old kid who can buy his first Mustang when he turns 16. So I was hooked. And first it was selling to collectors, and then the business began to change as we went through the removal of silver from our coinage, and we all became silver dealers. When silver certificates, the $1 bills that you could redeem for silver, were retired from circulation when the government reneged on their promise to redeem them from silver in 1968, well, we were buying and selling silver certificates. Eventually, we went through the silver and gold bull market of the 1970s as people move to protect themselves from that big inflation of that time period.
You know, I had that passion as a kid. I collected coins, and I used to, this was my business, such as it was when I was in my early teens. I would go down to the bank, and I would buy as many quarters as I could in rolls, and I'd fish through them, and you could still find one or two silvers, you know, every so often in them, and then I'd replace the quarters and just go back, and I just kept swapping them. So I was buying silver quarters for a quarter, and eventually stacked all those up. And I actually sold my silver at $40 in 79, right when it was going up and in. I felt bad about missing the $50 peak. So that was my first entree into this business as well, I guess, was I hoarded silver somehow intuitively as a kid and then sold into the first spike. I'm really interested. So you were in business in this store in that 79-80 period?
Not in this store. We were in San Mateo at the time. We opened this store in 1981 with the windfall from that those times in the business.
And so I want to find out about those times. So take us through. It's 1979. Silver's really starting to spike. Gold's starting to go up. And I guess they both peaked out somewhere in the January 1980 time frame. What was it like? First of all, start us out. As this is building, you know, gold had ramped up for a while and then fallen by 50% and then started its parabolic climb. What was the mood like? How many people were actually buying and selling gold and silver? And
very, very, very few. It was really a spin-off of coin collecting. Suddenly, people who had collected coins found that they had collections that were worth far more than they paid for them because of the gold and silver going up a lot. And back then, we didn't have a lot of mint-ready products for people to buy. If you wanted to go invest in gold, the only coin out up to 1979 for gold investing was the Krugerrand. If you wanted to invest in silver, you just took the old U.S. coins from circulation. There was very little modern mint product around, very little refiner product around. And the refiners, they were caught by surprise. Today, if we want to invest in pure silver, we can buy 10-ounce, 100-ounce, or 1,000-ounce silver bars. Back then, there was not much of that around. So we were selling just about anything made of silver to the new silver investors, coins that wouldn't normally be thought of as a way to invest in silver. The demand got so big that our collector inventories got sold down to all the new investors who were just looking for any kind of gold coin, any kind of silver coin. I remember one day we ran out of Krugerrands and U.S. $20 gold pieces, and the customer said, "Give me anything. Give me a coin." You know, and I said, "Well, I got this coin from Brazil, and I got some gold coins from Greece, and a few old things from Sweden." They would buy it. They didn't care because there was a shortage of consumer-ready product. Today, we have the consumer-ready product, but that's going to get overwhelmed too.
So people are coming in. They're buying whatever they can. Some people are selling. I was selling into that a little bit. What was it like? So talk to us. Yeah. Like, I hear a lot of stories these days. You know, we're in a gold bubble. I hear this. All 40 articles a week come out. We're in a gold bubble, right? And I don't think that's true, because I can go down to, I could walk out on the street right now, take the first 100 people that walk by, ask how many of them own gold on an investment basis, and I bet the answer is 0 to 1 or 2. Well, you know, to me, that's a bubble. So let's talk about what that bubble is like when we're really hitting that peak in January of 1980 or so. What was it like here?
Well, the phone calls were ringing so much we couldn't answer them. We had to just put all our lines on hold so we could service the customers, and our own customers we wanted to service first. We would come in to open at 9 in the morning, there'd already be a line out the door and down the block. And sometimes the line was mostly buyers, sometimes there were sellers. So we'd run out of metal, we'd run out of anything. And we'd have to divide the line into two lines. We'd take the sellers in first, get some product, sort it while the buyers are walking in. And people weren't very discriminating again. They were panicking. By the time it peaked in January 1980, there were people out there who didn't even understand free market economics or precious metal economics. They were just buying because it was fashionable or because it was going up forever. And those are more the makings of a bubble.
Mm-hmm.
Today, most people are coming in to sell.
Most individuals are coming in.
The majority of people coming in are coming in to sell. Now, you know, every equation has a balance, but the reason is because the buyers are either overseas, where we export, or they are bigger money than the sellers.
So describe the typical seller today. Is this somebody with a smallish collection, just has a few, has some gold, some silver somehow?
Well, the typical seller today is really the opposite of who they were 30, 40, 50 years ago. When people used to save, either through a bank account, through keeping some coins around, putting away silver dollars when they came back from Reno or Lake Tahoe, maybe buying some interesting furniture or jewelry. And then they had income in excess of their expenses. Today, so many households are stressed, having expenses greater than their income, or servicing a lot of debt, that they're starting to sell the things, the heirlooms that they so prized before. So we're seeing people sell their Rolex they don't want anymore or can't afford to keep, their old jewelry, their parents' jewelry and belongings that they inherited, the coins they collected when they were a kid. It's sad in a way, because what we're seeing is the dishoarding of a culture.
Hmm. And so these people are bringing in their heirlooms, and they're just looking for cash at this point in time. Who's buying? You mentioned it's going overseas. I'd like to find out, you know, what you know about that, and who the typical buyer is at this point.
Well, in the United States, a typical buyer is perhaps someone who has taken the crash course and has studied what is happening to our nation and understands that they have to protect themselves from the coming inflation and social ramifications of that inflation and the debt-burdened economy. Big money is buying. But for every one buyer, it's got to be five sellers here. And I'm sure that's similar among my colleagues around the country, maybe even more so because over here we're in a wealthier area, and I still have more sellers than buyers. A lot of it's going overseas. A lot of the coin that came to America over the decades, over the generations, either through the fact that we had the money to buy them, or through immigration, or through the spoils of war, it's all going back now to the home countries, especially if it's a home country where their economies are rising and the people are saving rather than spending. Just last night we had two visitors from China, colleagues of mine in Shanghai. They flew here just to see me. They flew back the next morning. They can't get enough coins in China. They're buying everything back that came here when the people in China couldn't buy their own coins. Next weekend I have more visitors coming. Coin shows which have been all over America are now appearing all over the world. There's now major coin shows and gathering marts in Singapore, Tokyo, Beijing, Hong Kong. Used to be once a year, now it's 3-4 times a year. Big auctions that used to be held in the United States are now organizing in Hong Kong and other countries. So we're seeing a movement back in the opposite direction, and it's sad.
So the ebb and flow of gold and silver really can be tracking the rise and fall of fortunes, as it were, leaving out the spoils of war. So I guess those went to victors. But otherwise, we're saying that once a nation of savers in the United States, now a nation of spenders. And in that, once we accumulated gold and silver, now we're selling it, typically at the smaller retail level. For every 5 small sellers, there's one big buyer stepping in. A lot of these buyers maybe are from other countries now, particularly savings countries, countries that are on the ascendancy. There's a lot of new wealth created in China. They have a saving culture. So we're seeing the ebb and the flow. Gold and silver are flowing that direction. Yeah. Is that fair?
That's true. And I was thinking, we still do have small buyers here. And by small buyers, I mean people who produce more than they spend and save the difference. And so many of those savers who buy 1 ounce of gold a month, they're people who have settled here from saving cultures, people from India, from China. I'm not seeing Americans who have been here for a few generations buying one Krugerrand a month. Very unusual.
And so in your business now, you're seeing, is this mostly bullion at this point people are interested in, or are people interested in numismatics at this stage, or is jewelry still coming and going? Or?
Well, most of the new buyers are just buying for bullion. And it's actually hurt the coin market. Coins was something again that is either a hobby or a hobby investment. You save money among many other ways through coins, and you accumulate them and you enjoy them. If they never went up in value, you'd have got the utility of enjoying the hobby, enjoying what you learned. Much of what's coming back through the door are those same coins. Mm-hmm. We're basically recovering everything that Americans accumulated or was sold to them in past generations. Now the typical buyer is conscious of what percent over gold does this product cost and how liquid is it anywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. We lost a generation or two of coin collectors to video games and computers and other things that don't involve savings but involve consumption.
And that consumption sort of extends, I guess, throughout all levels of society, maybe to government as well. And you've been in business a long time. I'm wondering if you have any reflections on how the business environment has shifted over time, whether you find it as agreeable a business environment today as it used to be, or if things are getting easier or harder in
well,
a way that would make you want to continue going on.
There are fewer in my business today than there were 40 years ago. 40 years ago, there was a coin store in every town, sometimes multiples of them. Mm-hmm. Today, there's fewer real coin dealers. There's a whole new proliferation of gold buyers and scrap buyers, but less coin dealers. So those of us who know and understand coins and recover these coins are few, and we're getting busier and busier, and we're actually getting overwhelmed. And in fact, I think as things turn from the public dishoarding further along the monetary crisis, where it becomes like the 1970s, where those who have anything left start to convert back to precious metals, we're going to be overwhelmed even more than we were last time. You know, the refiners, the dealers, there's going to be cash flow problems, turnaround time problems, refining problems, liquidity problems. People who rely on the internet or on the mail system or delivery system to get their product back and forth are going to have difficulties if they don't have good local relationships, not only for the things you speak about in neighborly cooperation for food and essentials, but also to facilitate a medium of exchange.
So you mentioned refinery problems. What's a refinery problem?
A refinery problem is where dealer buys the scrap gold and scrap silver, and his refiner can't get it processed for several weeks or months, and that squeezes his cash flow, so he has to pay less and less to the public.
So if I walk in with a bag of junk silver, it's 90% silver, it's always been trading well, but if we're in a real heyday, your refiner says, I'm backed up 11 weeks, I can take that in 11 weeks. Meanwhile, prices are gyrating. You're going to look at me and say what?
I'm going to say, Mr. Martinson, I wish you'd come in here with pure tradable silver, something that's exchange ready, industrially ready, or what it may be, but I think it might be something else. The marketplace is choice for medium of exchange. If you have silver in any other form, if it's in odd, as in coins, broken spoons and knives, mm-hmm. or whatever, and I have to have it refined in order to get it back in a util marketable form, it's going to suffer a discount. And that discount is going to be greater the longer it takes to turn that around.
So anything that has to cycle through a refinery has that refinery risk. What was the discount that got applied, say, at its most maximum in the 1980?
In 1980, when we were about 8 weeks backlogged and not everyone even had a refiner relationship and had to rely on other dealers who did, it got to about 30% discount for having the wrong form of silver versus the right form.
Right. So you could still move it, but you would take a hit on it.
Yes.
Relative to spot.
So there's always a market. You know, the market incorporates cash flow, risk, and time.
Mm-hmm. So if somebody was just starting out today, I walk in and I'm in one of these rare Americans I have saved, and I say, I would like to get started in precious metals, how would you advise me?
Well, we'd have a talk about what your temperament is for risk. Mm-hmm. And what viewpoints you already have as to which precious metal you're more biased toward, silver, platinum, palladium, gold. Mm-hmm. Find out if you're going to be staying here or you're going to be traveling around the world. Find out if your viewpoint is as a protection from, if your reasons are to protect yourself from inflation and to hold some of your assets in reserve, or if you believe the need of medium of exchange is imminent because of a breakdown in acceptance of government currency units, then we'd know if you want small coins, large coins, mm-hmm. or just big bricks of gold, mm-hmm. or silver, mm-hmm. how much premium is appropriate for you in order to get the right form for the times as they're evolving. And whether we're having an inflationary boom or an inflationary depression, which will have an impact on whether you have any industrial metals or only monetary metals.
And so do you consider gold and silver the same, or do you consider silver more of an industrial metal than a monetary metal?
It's both. Some of the demand for silver comes from industry. Some comes from misperception as a monetary metal. I think the balance of the components of where that demand comes from will be changing and evolving.
Mm-hmm. Which do you like better right now from a potential return standpoint?
Well, The easy answer is silver.
Mm-hmm. Silver's got more upside?
It has more upside. That's contingent upon how things play out in the coming monetary crisis. But I think affordability, as the general public moves into precious metals, more of it will spill into silver and gold.
So again, just to be very clear about this, where do you think we are in that story of the public moving into precious metals?
On a 10-point scale, 2.
We're to 2? And when we get to 9, you'll let me know? Hey, my store is jammed.
I won't be able to because my phones will be...
Oh, that's right. You won't be answering your phones.
Yeah, there'll be crowds outside my door and you'll have to fight your way through, you know. We'll meet secretly here at 4 in the morning.
Yeah. Okay, good. Good, because I would like to know when we're at that 9 stage or 10 stage. Because there will be a time to sell again at some point. I feel we're very far from
that. But also be some dangerous times ahead. I think the desperation sets in. It's going to change the way we all do business. Desperation and security are always on my mind. Mm. Desperation not only of those who... have been hurt economically and have been told to blame the evil businessman or the gold hoarders instead of where the blame rightfully belongs.
It's, you know, I was just sort of a tangential anecdote, but there was a case of a guy, a Dutchman recently. He owns a tobacco shop in Holland somewhere, and he was in Germany and bought some Cuban cigars from a German. And his money transfer, for whatever reason, routed out of his country and came through the U.S. heading towards Germany, and it got tracked through the Patriot Act something. And they seized it and held it and kept it and said, we're not giving it back to you because you were going to conduct an illegal transaction because we don't condone buying Cuban cigars here in America. And he's like, well, wait a minute, I'm not American. I wasn't in America. But they said, but your transaction looped through here. And it's just sort of an anecdote of how these laws and reach don't have to make sense, and once they get put in place, how they sort of continue to creep a little bit. Certainly I think if that story has resonated a bit in Europe where they're just quite upset and think that's maybe a bit heavy-handed over here, but it's an example perhaps of what happens when, I don't know, somehow common sense goes out the window after a period of time and you end up with stories like that. Do you ever worry about confiscation again? I get this question all the time.
My old answer was no. Confiscation occurred under circumstances when we were all obedient citizens and were not as worldly and didn't have the means of communication and mm-hmm. information as today. It might be wise to not only consider where gold is going to be tomorrow or where silver is going to be tomorrow as to when you act. And it may also take into account, will you be able to act and buy and sell freely down the road?
Mm-hmm. Yep, a lot of risks out there. So the story as I've heard it today is we're still very early in public awareness and participation in this in the United States, mostly sellers, small sellers, large buyers, and a lot of the gold and silver that is being sold is heading offshore and heading out. It helps the exports, so when you see the U.S. export figures, make sure you look at the line for precious metals. It's probably growing nicely. We could be proud of that. And so we're still early in this story, and you've seen the waves come and go, and in your sense, we're at the beginning of this next wave of interest, participation, and price appreciation.
Yeah, I believe so. I don't see any panic on the part of buyers or the public. There's still a lot of unawareness. People who come in who know that some people are buying gold or silver, if they haven't done their homework and understand why they are, they don't feel pressed to act. They'll walk out and think about it for a month, for a year. It's not like it was in 1979-80. Mm-hmm. It was so far in our culture. There would be on the Tonight Show, Johnny Carson would tell jokes about Krugerrands. Mm-hmm. The cartoons would appear in editorials about paying for your grocery with gold. They wouldn't take money. When you see it in our culture enough to where it's part of our humor and it's part of our pop culture, then you know that we're somewhere near that peak, that mania. But more than ever, more so than ever, when you see lines out my door.
And for anybody who happens to be in the Menlo Park region, I've Adam and I have sent many a person to Mish International Monetary right here on University Drive, and I would advise anybody who wants good, experienced consult and nice product selection. I love this store. We are surrounded by nice things here, and so there's great selection here, and I would advise anybody to come and have a chat and talk about how they can protect their wealth, because we're early in this game, and there's lots to go still.
Thank you. I think what you see here is because I'm still a collector. I'm still a hoarder. I mean, I'm in it as a business, but I also still have that passion for the hobby. So my colleagues, they like to joke about me because I never melt anything. You know, I hang on to everything, and now I can't even walk around here. But what it's left is a lot of interesting things for people to see and learn from. Because what we don't melt is something we can learn from. Why it was minted, why it was around, why it's coming back, who's buying it, who's selling it. If you look at the history of coins of the world, it's interesting as to what different cultures and countries would put on their coins, whether they put on their coins the politicians of the time being or you know, military or power type motifs, or whether they were things of culture or animals. Tells you a lot. A lot of history has been rewritten or gaps filled in through finds of coin hoards from burials or excavations. So that's what I still enjoy. I can sit down with a box of old coins, even after 50 years, and even after co-authoring a lot of books and sharing my experience and research, I learn something new every day. And I can get lost with the story of a very inexpensive coin that I hadn't seen before. And this is what's really, really missing from the youth of today. They're not getting that.
Well, don't worry.
They're not getting history in their hands.
In 800 years, people will be holding on to paper dollars, looking at them.
No, they'll be decaying.
Experiencing that same wonder and mystery.
Dust to dust.
Gold and silver, they don't corrode, they don't erode. So that's
exactly why
they've been metal and monetary metals all this time. Well, Robert, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Chris.
Really appreciate this, and I can't wait to share this with the rest of the listening public out there.
I'm honored. Thank you.
This concludes this podcast by Chris Martinson. To gain further insight into where things stand today and what might happen tomorrow, please visit chrismartinson.com. That's chrismartinson.com. Please join Chris Martinson next time to continue your journey toward awareness, understanding, and action.